Thank you everyone for coming. I apologize to keep you waiting a few minutes. The only bad news that I want to throw out, because I know I've had a few side conversations with a few of you since the last year, so the bad news is we're not going to quite reach one of the topics that I think some of you wanted to reach. I think we're going to have to add in another shear, perhaps in 2 weeks, to do that. If you take a look at the first, really the second slide, you'll see that it says the Gezeirot Midrabanan. So when it comes to Bishul, the laws of, well, we all malachos, but we've been focusing on Bishul, on cooking. So there are the biblical aspects, which we have pretty much gone through or touched on. And then there are five rabbinic prohibitions that relate to Bishul as well. We are going to discuss today, hopefully, if we can get through number one and two, Shehiya and Chazara, and I'll define those in a moment. The one in terms of how and what to heat up your food Shabbos morning, what you can do, what you can't do, which options are best, and so on. That really is going to fall into the third topic, what's called Nesina Lechatchila. And as I was putting the sources together for today, I realized there would be no way to get to that all in one shear. So hopefully that will mean we'll just come back to do this again. Fourth and fifth, we will define perhaps at the end, but I don't think we're going to take too much time to talk about them. Hatmana, let's define them all real quickly. Shehiya, we've mentioned in the past, is the prohibition of allowing a pot of food to be maintained on the fire on Shabbos. And I use that definition pretty, purposely, meaning it's not something you do on Shabbos, it's something you put on the fire before Shabbos, but are you allowed to maintain it there, are you allowed to keep it there on Shabbos? Again, obviously the case will be there if the food is not yet cooked fully when Shabbos begins. So we've touched on that in the previous year. We're going to talk a lot about that today. Chazara or Hachzara, depending on how you find it in the Svarim, is a very important topic. It comes up every single Shabbos in terms of returning pots to the fire, meaning something that was on the fire when Shabbos began. You took it off and you want to put it back on. So those are the two we'll get to today. Again, Nesina Lechatchila means putting something on initially for the first time on Shabbos. Hence, typically speaking, Shabbos morning. Again, it could happen Friday night too if you forgot to put something on. So it would be the same. And then Hatmana is a very long and complicated area of halacha, which it means to insulate, right? And exactly what you can do to maintain the heat of a food. Again, that's all off of a fire. Wrapping it in certain things, can you wrap it completely? So we will touch on that in one aspect. And then the last one, which people don't often realize, we're not going to spend any time talking about, but the actual prohibition of taking a shower, of rechitza on Shabbos, actually is a gezeirah d'rabbanan, right? Nobody likes to take a cold shower. And therefore the gezeirah is that if you were to take even a cold shower, you might come to heat the water on Shabbos. So it's actually a rabbinic prohibition that relates to our topic of Bishul. But nevertheless, we're going to transition and move on, and we are going to start with Shehiya. So if we take a look at source, or at slide 4, so we mentioned, and I'll just kind of talk about this, what could be the problem, right? If you put the food on the fire before Shabbos, so to violate Shabbos, I would have thought you'd actually have to do something on Shabbos. So how could it even be that you did something before Shabbos and that would in fact be a violation of Shabbos? Right? It's a little bit counterintuitive. So the answer is that's the truth, that min haTorah, you could not violate Shabbos without doing something on Shabbos. This is going to be a rabbinic prohibition. We're going to see why, different reasons why Chazal instituted this, that we're worried that you might come to do X. We'll see what that X is momentarily. And that's why this Gezeirah d'Rabbanan was put into place. So the real two questions we're going to have to talk about, which are there for you on slide 5, is why is it that this was prohibited? Meaning, what were Chazal really worried about? And based on that, we can talk about how can we avoid the problem, right? What can we do to permit ourselves to keep food on the fire from before Shabbos that wasn't yet fully cooked in a way that would be permissible. So to be able to answer the second question, obviously we need to first understand why. So if you look at slide 6, just to see the highlighted phrase, I'm not going to read the whole Mishnah, just because I want to try to get through both of these topics today, but it's a phrase that you should become familiar with because it's the point of this topic. It will also connect to the next topic of Hachzara, and that is those red were, or mine are colored, sorry, yours aren't. So if you could see in the second to last line of the Rashi on slide 6, you'll see the word Shema Yechata Begechalim, right? Which means literally that you might come to stoke the coals. Now we have to remind ourselves that in the days of Chazal, so they had different looking ovens, they didn't have ovens like we have. And they had, you know, the truth is, Masechta Shabbos talks about different types of ovens that they used in those days, but the moral of the story was that they had some kind of coals, that the way to raise the fire, you would have to actually stoke the coals to make the flame increase. So the point here is as follows. Again, what's our case? Our case is you have a chicken, whatever the kugel, whatever it is, that takes an hour to cook, and you forgot to put it in before Shabbos, or early enough before Shabbos, and you come 5 minutes and you realize, oh, I'm not going to have the food. You still have an hour for it to cook. The men are still going to be in shul, right? You're going to still have enough time for it to finish, let's say, right? Or it's for Shabbos morning, so you would still put it back in, right, so it could cook, whatever the scenario is. So you put it in 5 minutes before Shabbos, right? So what's the concern? The concern is, you know, you have all this company or just your own family, whatever it might be, and you're going to come back every couple of minutes to check on it, and you're going to get worried that maybe it's not going to get heated properly, and you're going to come to stoke the coals, or in our version, right, you might accidentally raise the flame. Now, again, we all know that you're not allowed to raise the flame on the stove, the same way the people and the Jews that lived in the time of Chazal knew that you weren't allowed to stoke the coals. Chazal were concerned that in the heat of the moment, you'd be so concerned that all the food would be ready properly that you'd forget, right? We're not worried about someone doing anything purposely. The whole purpose of the gezeros of Chazal were to protect us from instances where we might accidentally forget. So this notion of Shema Yechata B'Gachon. By the way, as an aside, we've already learned in the last year, you'd have all other kinds of problems as well, right? If you open the oven, you wouldn't be able to close the oven if the food wasn't cooked. So there's all other kinds of concerns that we should put back into play. But the bottom line is the main reason why you're not allowed to maintain a piece of food in the oven on Shabbos that is not yet, we'll call, fully cooked. We'll see if that's the proper way to define it. Or we'll say cooked to some point. What that is going to be a bit debatable. You're not allowed to do. So the question is, what can we therefore do to be okay here, to be allowing this? So the first answer is obvious, right? Cook the food before Shabbos. But that's not what you did, right? Right? You're not in that scenario. So is there some other option of cooking the food perhaps less than fully, A? Or B, is there some other action that we can take that can remove the fear of Chazal? Meaning, Chazal are worried that we're going to come over, we're going to check the food, oh, it's not ready, and accidentally raise the flame. So is there something else we can do to alleviate that concern? So the truth is that both of those things, I think what we'll do is we'll start with, if you look at slide 8, I just kind of put it out there into English words, and this is what we're going to talk about over the next couple of minutes. The Mishnah and the Gemara talk about the phrase garuf okatum, which essentially means in our day and age to cover the flame. Okay, it doesn't mean to put out the flame. If you put out the flame, you haven't accomplished anything, right? The point is you want the food to cook, right? But you've covered the flame, and the Mefarshim explained that the purpose of that is you're doing something odd, right? You're doing something odd to your cooking setup to remind yourself that it's Shabbos, right? Again, you're not putting out the flame because then we haven't done anything. So the whole institution of the blech is exactly, in Chazal's terminology, what we call katum, covering the fire, right? When we put on, similarly, the way we put a blech on it, that doesn't extinguish the fire, right? It's just a cover to it, purpose being that now when we walk over to the stove, like, let's forget the oven for a minute, right? Some of us might remember the days, this is more a Pesach-related item, where you might have had an oven insert, right? So that would probably be a blech for an oven. We'll come back to that in a minute. But let's just stick, you have a pot of meatballs that you put up 5 minutes before Shabbos, right? So if you put on a blech, that will allow you to put your pot of meatballs on a minute before Shabbos, right? Even though it's not cooked at all or very barely. The point is you put it on before Shabbos and you have a blech on top of the stove. So now you might come back to the stove to look at it, but you're going to see your blech, and that's going to remind you of Shabbos, right? Most of us, I think, don't use a blech on the weekdays, right? The purpose of the blech, of covering the fire, is for this purpose, right? We'll have to see how the blech plays into our other topics, too. But in its real institution of the purpose of where the blech began, it really had nothing to do with Shabbos morning. It has to do with this exact scenario, where if you cover the fire, it is a reminder to you that it's Shabbos, something is different, and therefore we don't have to be concerned that you'll forget. And therefore, we could end the shiur right now, although the challenge to that is we're going to have some examples that will be not going to work with a blech, right? But if you could create a blech in your stove, oven, hot plate, crock pot, whatever example, we'll talk about an urn. Obviously, you're not going to use a blech for an urn, but we'll see why an urn we have less problems with most of the time, right? So those are, I covered most of the normal heating, cooking elements that we use on a weekly basis. If you can create a blech, then we could stop the shiur right now. You know, a minute before Shabbos, if you need to, you still can put the food on. As long as you have a blech, you're able to do that. The challenge is, I don't know if they still make those oven inserts anymore, because everybody for Pesach purposes everyone knows what I'm talking about, right? So imagine, right, so some of us are probably a little too young to remember them. For Pesach, before they had self-cleaning ovens, which heat the oven to a point that can kosher the oven, it used to be for Pesach that they didn't have that, so if you used a blowtorch to kosher your oven, you probably would destroy it, so that wasn't a good solution. So typically what the poskim said you could do is you could heat your oven to the highest degree possible, but in those days, again, pre-self-heating, it wasn't quite hot enough to be considered the proper temperature to totally kosher it. So they would make what we call an oven insert, which is just imagine your blech in a box that literally fit into your oven. And again, from what I understand, I do remember seeing one in my house, but I don't remember actually ever using one, like personally, so I can't speak more than that oven. Right? It literally fit into the ovens the same way, they now make, five different sizes of a blech to cover one flame, two flames, four flames. Right? So the same way that was made. So again, if you have now a dish that you need to put in your oven, right, your chicken example, right, I don't think we're going to put a cooked chicken on top of our stove to have it ready for Friday night, right? So if it's something that's 10 minutes before Shabbos, you forgot about it, so you don't have a solution yet how to handle that dish, right? So that's why we have to keep continuing on with the shiur. But if you could use a blech, right, similarly, we'll talk about a crock pot or hot plates, right? And each of those are different because there are hot plates that are adjustable and not adjustable. So we'll see how that comes into play here. There used to be, I haven't seen a non-adjustable crock pot in a really long time. I don't know if that even exists anymore. Most of them still have somewhat of an adjuster. And we'll see, the bottom line is what we'll get to in a few minutes is that if it doesn't adjust, then there's nothing to be concerned about, right? So that's why, I think the platas, the hot plates, the non-adjustable hot plates that are so common, typically that come from Israel, are going to be very good solutions to lots of our problems on Shabbos for this very reason, that if they don't adjust, then there's nothing that could go wrong. Right? You could put it on and you might not be happy it's not getting hot enough, but there's nothing you could do about it. So, that's the idea of the blech. Now, before we move on to talk more about those specific appliances I mentioned, I brought here for you, I don't know what slide it's on, slide 11, I think. I'm not going to read it for you, but it is an interesting one in case you are interested. So Rav Moshe Feinstein raises the following question. We just talked about covering the fire, based on the Gemara, Garuf V'Katam, to cover the fire. So for us, in our day and age, is that sufficient? Meaning, we're not stoking the fire itself, right? There's a knob that controls the flame. So do you have to cover the knobs as well, right? Nobody, no post can say that you can just cover the knobs. That's not a suggestion that Chazal, that any of the posts can talk about. Everyone agrees the Gemara said you have to cover the fire, you have to cover the fire. But Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about, do you also have to cover the knobs themselves? When we say cover, we don't mean like that doesn't necessarily mean like they have to be covered like from head to toe. Like you could take a little piece of foil and just put it on there so that it's recognizable. Some people just put a piece of tape over it, right? The idea is that it looks strange so that if you'll come to it, you know, and see it, you'll remember it's Shabbos. So the reality is, before I get to Rav Moshe, that most poskim assume that you do not have to cover the knobs. We basically, what the Gemara says is what we have to do. The Gemara said cover the fire. That's a recognizable siman that it is Shabbos for you. You'll see it. It's obvious. When you walk in by your stove, you see the blech. And therefore, that's good enough. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in this tshuva that I have here for you, he thinks otherwise. He thinks that because there are day and age, the actual raising of the fire is done through the knobs, he thinks that you should cover the knobs again as well. And that's why, again, I don't know if they're so prevalent here, but I know, you know, in the States, you often find if you go shopping for a blech, there's like two models, right? There's like just the flat piece that is, and they even make one that has like a front little cover that this way it would, you know, if this was my stove, it would actually come over and down to cover the knobs. The only problem is modern technology is getting ahead of our Jewish producers and manufacturers, and you know, I bet if we each went into our own kitchens and looked at our where the knobs were on our stove, they would be in five different places, right? So I'm not so sure. Even if we do want to follow Rav Moshe, which I think many people do try to do that, I don't know that you need to make yourself crazy and go like design a blech that's going to work that way. I would just get the standard blech, and then wherever your knobs are, find a little piece of tinfoil you could like smush on top of it, or take a piece of tape and put over it. And I think that will be Yotzei Rav Moshe Feinstein's concern, and you don't have to worry. Again, I think that's why it would be a little difficult to go with those pre-made ones. Again, unless you're fortunate to have an oven that it works perfectly for. So now, what about the scenarios I talked about where you can't put a blech? So what would be a scenario there? Anything that you want to put in your oven, again, because I don't believe we can find any more of these inserts that I'm referring to. What about, and again, these are not as common anymore. What about, in the old days, they used to make urns that were actually adjustable too, right? Where you'd have like, you know, high, low, medium, or different temperatures to the water. Most of the urns that we buy, especially if we're buying them for Shabbos purposes, are you plug it in and it goes on. Maybe there's an on-off button, maybe a Shabbos button. That's really more for Yontif, right? By the way, parenthetically, we don't have time to talk about that now. Maybe we'll talk about that in the next year, right? As great as the companies are that they want to be so you know, tolerant and inclusive of Jews, I think they get the terminology wrong, right? So, for example, most of the ovens, when they call Shabbos mode, really, for most purposes, again, we'll talk about that next week, really should be called, according to most poskim, at least, Yontif mode. Similarly, the urns that have the Shabbos button, and these are ones that come from Israel, really, from my understanding, are really just there so that on Yontif, when you're allowed to cook, you can actually open them up and add more water into it, right? It's just kind of disconnecting the lights so that they don't go on and off, because then you wouldn't be able to do that on Yontif, right? But on Shabbos, if it doesn't adjust, there's nothing that's going to go wrong, right? So if there's no adjustment, there's no problem. So again, we could come up, you know, crock pots we could talk about too in a little bit. So what do you do, or what are the options? So we mentioned in a shiur before one of the ideas here, but now I'll ask it to you in a little different way. So how far cooked does the food have to be so that this gezeirah of Chazal is not in place? Meaning, up to what point would Chazal have been worried that you're going to come over, lose yourself in the moment, and raise the flame, right? So one option, which if you look on slide 14, I give you the machlokas there just in terms of the players in the Gemara. So the opinion of the Chachamim is that it actually has to be what we call mevushal kol tzorcho, fully cooked. So long as it's not fully cooked, you might, you know, get nervous and accidentally raise the flame. Whereas Hanania, who was one of the Amoraim, is of the opinion, no, it has to be cooked to the point of Ma'achal Ben Drusai, right? So for those of you who are here, Ben Drusai is our old friend, the bandit, the thief in the times of Chazal, that we used in our first year to use to define what is the minimal amount cooked. Now again, we use that definition for the conversation of a preliminary nature, just what is cooked on Shabbos, right? When would you violate the Torah prohibition, right? For example, we mentioned if you take a raw chicken on Shabbos now, don't do this, but if you did, and put it in the oven for 2 minutes, took it out, you would not violate the Torah prohibition of Bishul. You haven't cooked anything yet, right? That's how Bishul is different. It's a process. Again, Chazal said you can't do that, so don't put anything raw in the oven on Shabbos. But this is really, for us, the more practical application of Ben Drusai. According to Hananya, if the food is already cooked, albeit it's not yet ready, you're not going to lose yourself. Meaning, as long as the food is basically cooked, when you come to check on it, right, you'll say, it's not fully cooked. It'll get there. By the time everyone comes home from shul and it's time to eat, it'll get there. Or, right, the point is you'll recognize that it's enough cooked that it'll kind of register and you won't, you know, lose yourself in the moment and come to raise it. Now, this is where that debate we mentioned the last time, or that first time, comes much more into play practically. So on slide 15, it's the same slide I had given you that last time. What is considered Ben Drusai? So I mentioned quickly that that's a debate between Rashi and the Rambam, but now it has a much bigger significance than before. So Rashi says it's a third cooked. The Rambam says it's a half cooked. So let's not say what we can do yet. Let's just say according to Hananya, the Tana in our Mishnah, who says that so long as your food is cooked to Ben Drusai before Shabbos begins, no problem. You're allowed to leave that food there, and you don't have to take it off before Shabbos. Because if it's not to that point, we're going to see you'd actually have to take that food off and, you know, I guess put it in the fridge and cook it for Sunday night dinner. I don't know, right? But it won't work for Shabbos. So now we have to go back to our math game, right? So if the chicken you're putting into the oven takes, now, right, it's on, your oven's on whatever temperature you have it left on, you have to figure out if it's going to take a half an hour to cook, an hour to cook, then you have to do the math, right? So long as it's cooked to one of these 2 points, right? So which one we have to say, which one we follow. So if you take a look, we will get back to that in a moment. If you look at source 17, let's take a look at, let's read a little bit of this together. This is the Shulchan Aruch talking about this. So on the top of slide 17, Im nitbashel ktsas, right, if it's a little bit cooked, v'lo nisbashel kol tzarcho, not fully cooked, chayshin an shema yechata, we're still worried that you might come to raise the flame, v'asru l'hashoso aleha, and therefore it's forbidden to do shahiyah, to let it stay on the fire, ela'im kin garaf, unless you use the blech, right, you cover the fire, in which case this whole conversation of how cooked it is really is not so important anymore. Dahainu shahotzi mimeno, so he defines what that means, what garaf is. Again, in our practicality, it's the blech. Look at the next paragraph. V'yishomim, but there are some who say, shekol shen es bashel kemachal ben drusai, in the parentheses he defines who that was, as we talked about, skip the parentheses, mutr lashoso agabi kira, afil eina grufa. So we're a little confused now. Which one is it? The Shulchan Aruch says, first, it has to be fully cooked. If it's less, you can't. Then he says, but there's another opinion out there that says as long as it's cooked to the point of Ben Drusai, it is okay to leave it there on the fire. So the Shulchan Aruch seems to be quoting both opinions. So again, for Sfardim, I didn't have a chance to double check this. We'd have to double check exactly which one of the two, right? If there are any Sfardim in the room, it's a fascinating topic. I happened a long time ago, I had a good friend of mine, we were Chavrusas, who was a really big Sfardi, very into Sfardic halacha. And so Rav Avadia Yosef Zatzal has a sefer, like a whole sefer, on just discussing this topic. When you have the Shulchan Aruch quoting different opinions, right? Because again, for Sfardim, they don't get to the Rama or the Mishnah Berurah or anyone after that. For them, what the Shulchan Aruch says is it. So how do you interpret Yesh Omrim? There are some who say V'Yesh Omrim. There's all kinds of rules that Rabbi Avadi Yosef puts into place, which are fascinating. Again, mostly applicable to the Sfardim. In our case, let's look at the last line, Haggah, which is the Haggahos of the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, who is the Ashkenazic, head posik, so to speak. V'Nahagu L'Hakel K'Svara Achrona. So the Rama says that our custom is to be lenient, like the second opinion, which is that as long as it's cooked to machal ben drusay when Shabbos begins, you could leave the food on the fire. So that's point one. Now we still have to figure out which opinion of machal ben drusay, a third or a half, so let's hold that for a second. But let's just be very clear. So again, for Ashkenazim, the Rama says that as long as the food is cooked to machal ben drusay before Shabbos begins, you're allowed to leave it there, no problem. Now, take a look on the next slide. So I quoted for you the Mishnah Berurah. It's only two lines. So the Mishnah Berurah says, it's a little bit out of context. I just didn't want to take for such a full piece. But he's talking about this Rashi Rambam, a third or half, because that could make the difference on a particular Shabbos if the food, if you only have enough time for it to cook a third and not a half. Are you allowed to keep that food on the fire or not? It could have some real practical ramification. So he says, "Hashulchan Aruch l'kamam b'sifrei zamdal stam chatzi bishul." So really, we should assume that machal ben drusay is chatzi bishul, which is the opinion of the Rambam. U'bemakum hadchak efshar d'yesh lahakel. But if you're stuck, you could be lenient. Lenient meaning what? Follow Rashi that machal ben drusay is a third. So again, I have this all written out there in English for you, but I'll just say it quickly. So the point really is that again, we have two stages here. That as long as we can get the food to, if we can put a blech, we're done. We don't have to care about how much the food is cooked before Shabbos. Don't pay attention to it. It's not important. I mean, it might be for your menu and for your guests, but it's not important in terms of this halacha. Okay? And in terms of scenarios where you can't put a blech, so we have this debate, fully cooked or machal ben drusay. So we saw that the Shulchan Aruch, not really sure, he seems to quote both. The Rama says we follow Chananya, which means that it has to be cooked only to the point of ben drusay, and that would be enough. What is that? A half or a third? So preferably, and this would be the message I would give you, preferably if you were able to get the food cooked to half point before Shabbos, that would be preferable. But if not, as Ashkenazim at least, we have the right to be lenient, and as long as it was a third cooked before Shabbos began, you're allowed to leave that food there. And I say the words preferable, but it's a little bit like of a joke, because most of the times we're doing this, it's like we're stuck, right? We didn't do it on purpose, we forgot, or something happened, right? So the bottom line is, if you have a scenario where you have the food that you need for Shabbos, and you don't have to like start making yourself crazy, like, do I really need it? Did I make six dishes and this is the seventh? Or is it the third, right? I don't think you need to make yourself crazy about that. You have your plans for what you're making, whether it's just for your family or for company, it doesn't matter. And you had a particular food that you had planned to make and you forgot it or whatever it might be, I think there's plenty of room to be lenient here. And therefore, as long as you could get that food cooked to a third, before Shabbos began, you're allowed to keep it there. And just with that in mind, as we finish up this part of it, on slide 19, actually says this point, Im shachach v'shaha tavshil shehitchu v'zbasha v'lo igi l'machal ben drusay. What happens? You didn't do this, right? You forgot. And the food was not yet when Shabbos began, right? You're still a minute before Shabbos now. It's not yet going to be cooked before machal ben drusay. Usur, right? It's usur to leave that pot of food there. It would also be usur to eat that food if it was done accidentally. So you have to be really careful about this. And he says, "V'ein sarach lomar im avar v'shaha." And all the more so, you wouldn't be allowed to eat the food if somebody purposely, like you realized that you should have taken it off before Shabbos, and you left it there anyway. So all the more so in that scenario, you're not allowed to eat the food again. You don't have to throw it out. You can eat it after Shabbos. Just on Shabbos, you're not allowed to eat that food. So in either scenario, the point here is that this topic is quite important because we want to make sure that we're doing it properly. Now, just to take a quick run through, if you look at slide 20, and I'm really going to try to do this quickly because I want to get to the second topic, which will go a bit quicker because a lot of the ideas we're talking about are very interrelated. So these are really the practical types of heating elements that we need to address. So let's start with that. So the urn, let's talk about this. This is very practical. This happens, right? It's my job in the house, Erev Shabbos, to put the water up. So I, unfortunately, have to know about this every week. And often I'm doing it at the last moment. So is that a problem, right? How much before Shabbos do you need to put the water into the urn and plug it in, right? So again, if the first part we could say is, well, if you put it up before Shabbos, you know, whatever amount of time, and it depends how big it is and how it works, however, so that it gets boiling or as hot as it gets before Shabbos, great, right? But again, that's not me. I'm forgetting. I'm doing it last minute. So do I have to worry about that, right? You can't make a blech in an urn, right? So that's where it comes back to what I said before. If it's not adjustable, it doesn't matter because there's nothing that I'm going to do. My wife might come or I might come, you know, a few minutes into Shabbos and see that the water isn't hot yet, but like there's nothing I can do about it, right? So it's not going to make a difference. There's nothing I can do to make it hotter. So therefore, technically speaking, and again, this happens for me all the time, but it's important to know because some people don't realize that you can literally plug the urn in 2 minutes before Shabbos and you have no problem, okay? Again, it's great to do it beforehand just because we shouldn't rush. Again, I need my own musser on that. But there's really, with a non-adjustable urn, there's actually nothing that could go wrong. So that would be not a problem. Okay, what about hot plates? Now, with hot plates, similarly, right, so I gave you one picture there, which again, in the black and white may not be so good. So we'll call it the non-adjustable hot plates, which are pretty common. You can find them. I haven't been to a local Judaica store here yet, but I'm assuming that you can find them in the local Judaica store. So these typically, although I think the American companies are catching up, most of these come from Israel for this purpose. So when it comes to our topic, you could put the soup or whatever you want a minute before Shabbos onto the hot plate, and not worried about how cooked it is, how hot it is, or anything like that. Again, I don't recommend that with soup because it's not going to get hot enough as quickly as you need it, most likely. But in terms of heating up food, cooked or not cooked, and again, more realistically, it's a cooked food, but it probably has some liquid in it, which you wouldn't be allowed to put on Shabbos, right? So you could put that on a minute before Shabbos, even though the liquid is not yet hot. It's going to continue to get hot as Shabbos goes. As long as you put it on before Shabbos, not a problem at all. Again, can you on Shabbos, you're not going to be able to because of the liquid. We'll talk about solids. That'll be the next year. But again, the point being, and this is, I think, one of the examples of why I think when we learn these topics, it's so important to start at the beginning, right? To understand now why something that's non-adjustable isn't a problem, like, makes sense. Because the whole purpose, the whole fear Chazal had was that you would raise the flame. And if you can't raise it, then there's nothing to be concerned about. Now, I don't know if anybody ever still has an adjustable. On the next slide, I have on 23. You know, an adjustable hot plate. Again, if you do, it's for sure not made in Israel. It's for sure made somewhere else. The reality is, I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't use those on Shabbos, right? It just means that if you have one of those, you're going to need to create a blech, which is rather simple. Take aluminum foil, cover it. According to Rav Moshe Feinstein, cover the knob, and you're done, right? It's not a problem. Right, Shabbos morning, it might be slightly more complicated than the non-adjustable one, but we'll get to that next week. So again, if it's adjustable, then you just have to deal with the fact that it's adjusted and cover the flame. What about a crock pot? So this is an interesting one. So a little complicated, right? So what's a good Jewish household without a good chillin on Shabbos? Although I'm noticing here lots of people are more into the pulled beef than just a standard chillin. That's what I'm noticing, which I think in my family people have come to appreciate. Yeah, because nobody eats the rest of the stuff in our house. They just like the beef. But in any event, same thing. It doesn't matter what's in the crock pot. It's what you're putting in, right? The fact that you're using one. So this goes, and I think we raised this in the first year a little bit, how far cooked does your cholent have to be before Shabbos? Right? So let's try to keep this simple for a moment, and I'll tell you why it could get a little more complicated. So if you're using a crock pot, what we've learned together today would be the best solution, so you don't have to care how cooked it is, right, is to make a blech. Now, we just have to be clear, when it comes to crock pots, there really are two different types of crock pots that are made. The one that you see in the picture there is probably, on slide 24, is probably the standard type of crock pot. It's usually in some kind of circle or oval type of shape, where you have a pot, and then you have a metal heating element, and then the pot sits inside the heating element, and that's how it works, right? It is adjustable, obviously. Like I said, I don't think they make non-adjustable crock pots anymore. So that's one type of crock pot. The other type of crock pot, which is going to be preferred for some other reasons we'll get to hopefully in a few minutes, in some ways, again, not to say that this is not, you can use this one as long as you do what we're talking about, there's also a crock pot which really, it's just like a little mini hot plate. It adjusts, right? And it's usually more like a rectangle, right? They're all called slow cookers. I don't think any of these are really called crock pots, but that it's, you know, you won't see the word crock pot on this, but it really is the same thing, and it sits on top. Now, for our topic right now, it doesn't make a difference which crock pot you use. The only thing is you'd have to make a blech. If your cholent wasn't cooked, let's say at least a third before Shabbos began, right? That's what we've been seeing so far, which for some of you is not a big deal because some people like to put the cholent up Friday morning so that you can eat some of it, you know, Friday night. And some people put it up later in the day. So if you want to put it up later in the day, then you would need a blech. So I just want to be careful about that, right? There may be different reasons why you would have a blech in your crock pot. Right? For this topic, if you put up your cholent Friday morning, you don't need a blech. But if you want to put it up Friday morning and eat it Friday night, so then we're going to talk about, again, we may lose time, we might need to add two shiur, I'm not sure. If you're going to take the pot out to serve it, perhaps, and then you're going to want to return it, which is our next topic, chazara, you're going to need a blech too. So it is probably good practice, similar to how we had that conversation last time about klisheni, klishlishi. There may be scenarios where you really don't need the klishlishi, but not to confuse yourself and confuse others, it might be a good practice just to use the klishlishi all the time. So similarly, because of the three issues that we're going to, or two issues, we're talking about one now and the returning one, it might be good practice to put a blech on your cholent as well. Again, I want to be clear. If your household, you put it up Friday morning because that just works for your life, and nobody touches the cholent Friday night in your household, and you take it Shabbos morning or lunch and you're done, so you don't need to make a blech. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it needs to have a blech, but what I'm saying is both of these topics that we're getting to have a need for a blech, and therefore you might need one. Now, just very simply with the crock pot, the one that is most common, this one that you have the picture of, all that would mean before Shabbos, and again, preferably before you plug it in so you don't take a chance of burning yourself, you would literally just take aluminum foil. You probably, if it's a big one, you probably need kind of two pieces, and you would just stuff the aluminum foil into the heating element, you know, as smoothly as you can, and then you put the pot in afterwards, and there's nothing going to go wrong. There's no fire hazard. It all works just nice and well. And most likely you should also allow the aluminum foil to stick out a bit because it's a little different than a standard blech. Standard blech, you would walk over your stove and you see the blech, right? If the whole aluminum foil is covered inside the heating element and you walk over to it, you're not going to see that. So what most folks are going to do is just let it stick out a drop so that it's visible, and then you're fine. So in terms of shehiyah, our topic for today, so what you would... According to the easy way of going about things, and you'll see why I'm going to complicate it one step further in a second, get it cooked before Shabbos, that would be ideal, right? having a blech again, perhaps then you don't have to care about how cooked it is. But if it's not going to have a blech, then it should be cooked at least to a third or a half before Shabbos begins. The only complication, before we talk about warming jaws for a minute, is that there is another halacha which is a bit complicated. And what it what the halacha basically is, that it's an authentic halacha, comes from the Gemara. It's a little hard to know exactly when to apply it. But Chazal say that if you were to stick a piece of raw meat into your pot of food right before Shabbos, then this whole issue of Shehiyah would fall away. Why? Because you're actively showing that you are not intending to use this food for a long time. Because you're actively putting in a piece of something raw that's clearly not going to cook that quickly. And that would be permissible, that would allow you to permit this topic of Shehiyah. So that is authentic. Everyone agrees that that's the case. Most poskim say that today, the way our ovens work, they're going to cook much faster. Again, not crock pot. That's why the crock pot's a little more complicated. But an oven will allow it to cook much more quickly. And we should not rely on this notion of putting in a piece of meat just before Shabbos into a pot of food that's going into the oven based on this logic, because it really could cook. So now we return back to our slow cooker. So it's a little complicated. Some people accept it, some people don't accept it. So my suggestion really is, before I tell you my suggestion, what this would mean is, hypothetically, there would be another way to permit your cholent, even if it was, bedafka if it's not fully cooked, bedafka if it's not a third cooked, where you actually, right before Shabbos, stick in a piece of raw meat, you're saying that you, and it's a slow cooker, it's going to cook, take time to cook. So in my view, that would be only, I would use that if you're really stuck where you can't make a blech, because I think if you make a blech, that would be ideal. That would be the best way to go about it. So if you can't make a blech and you don't have enough time to get it cooked to a third before Shabbos, which again, this could be a real live scenario, and you don't want to go the Shabbos without your chillin, then I think, again, perhaps we should consult our local Rav, but that would be a scenario perhaps where we could rely on this notion. Again, I wouldn't do this with an oven, but with a crock pot, a slow cooker, I think we could, and take a piece of, literally, out of the fridge or freezer or whatever, a piece of raw meat, put it into the crock pot, even though the crock pot's, let's just say, 10% cooked, I don't know, whatever it is, less than a third, and I think you could leave it there and allow it to continue cooking on Shabbos. Again, it's a little complicated, so it's only my hesitation on that. Now, warming drawers. So warming drawers are a very interesting conversation, and we're not going to talk thoroughly about them now. We will talk about them more in the next two topics. But suffice it to say that warming drawers also have adjustments, right? They high, low, medium, or they some of them actually have temperatures. They have different things. So the point is, a warming draw from this perspective would be no different than your oven, right? So in terms of putting something that's not fully cooked into your warming draw before Shabbos would also therefore cause you a problem. So you'd have to get it again, either put a blech, which you could do. You have to be more careful about that with warming draws, just from a fire perspective. And we'll talk more about that next time, or just make sure the food is cooked. And again, realistically, you're not putting raw food into your warming jar because it's not going to cook it. But I think the realistic example would be where it's some kind of, I don't know, chicken with some gravy or something like that, where it's not going to heat the liquid all the way up before Shabbos, right? So putting that in before Shabbos would be an issue of Shehiyah if it really isn't going to heat up before, you know, that moment when Shabbos begins. So if that's the case, you would have to make some kind of blech. We'll talk about next week how to go about doing that, or if you really can do that. So for those of you who do rely on a warming jaw for Friday night, I would recommend That you really make sure that all the food is in there well before Shabbos in time to make sure that it is, heated properly. So with that in mind, I'm looking at the clock. We're going to stop here because it took us a bit to get through this. So we're going to need at least one more shiur that we'll schedule for 2 weeks from today. And perhaps another one after that. We'll see how quickly we get. But just the 1 minute of summary, to avoid this prohibition, it's important to remember that utilizing the blech will solve all of your problems. Again, if it's an appliance that can sustain a blech, and if it's not, then preferably get it fully cooked, and if you can't even get that, then get it to be the third cooked before Shabbos. Thank you everyone for joining. We'll see you next time.